my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It's showtime.
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the VHS Strikes Back. I am one of your hosts, Chris, and my co-host and very good friend is Dave.
Hey there, Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to the VHS Strikes Back, the show where we dust off the old video player and go on a nostalgic journey to look at the good and the bad movies of yesteryear. Now, Chris, what are we going to review this week?
Well, Dave, this was your pick, and we're going back. And again, though, Dave, a 1997 movie like Devil's Advocate, like the Hulk Hogan Assault on the Devil's Island. You know, obviously peak movies for that year, Dave, some classics, you know, Hulk Hogan at his peak. But we are going to be reviewing, Dave, the Michael Douglas, David Fincher directed action mystery thriller, The Game. So, Dave, what do you remember about this one?
Well, you know, I was literally thinking yesterday, I was thinking, oh, I'm going to have to branch out a bit from the late 90s because the last one being Devil's Advocate, this one being The Game, right in my kind of blockbusters time when I'm watching pretty much every movie that comes out, or certainly all the hits and everything. But yeah, this one would have come out, it would have been late 97, wouldn't it? 98 when it came on. Probably early 98, actually, now that I think about it. And yeah, I just remember a few people at the store. We were in the big, massive, you know, those big old superstores in Preston back then. And so I just remember someone saying, you know, oh, this game's quite good, and you look at the cover and you're like, right, it's Michael Douglas, and I just kind of associated him more with 80s, even though he'd been in stuff like Falling Down, which is 90s as well. But I was like, all right, go on then, I'll give it a go. And I just remember watching it, and I was kind of like, yeah, this is okay, you know, your classic kind of thriller. But I remember the atmosphere around it was quite gripping. It's like, what the fuck's going on? And then, you know, you get to the twist. You know, we've talked about this a little bit with Usual Suspects, don't you? It's like, holy shit, you know. And so I just remember after watching it that first time, it was just like, oh, fucking hell, this is brilliant. But then it's another one of those movies that I don't think I've watched again since. And I was thinking, when I picked it last week, I was thinking, oh, I wonder if it's going to stand up and, you know, what Chris is going to make of it. But yeah, in my memory, this was a great movie. How about yourself, Chris?
Well, you know what, Dave? I said last week, I've not seen it. I think I've seen bits of it. So I think this was probably one of them ones where I'd gone to my granddad's, and he loved these sort of movies, you know, like the thriller type movies. Both my granddads, the granddad who used to get annoyed, I've mentioned loads of times when he used to watch the martial arts movies, Dave, was on my dad's side. That's my granddad Phelps. He was like fucking absolutely short tempered and just fucking, you know, that's how I could watch all these Lauren Avedon abominations and stuff, because he gets, as I say, gets so annoyed. Just pick what you want, because we spend hours in there. So then, but then my mum's dad, who just passed away last week, he's from Belfast, and he was one of my granddad John, he was one of the most laid back people you could ever meet, Dave. So he got me into The Godfather, loved the gangster movies, stuff. It'd take him about half an hour to walk about 300 yards to the video shop, my granddad. He's just so fucking chilled, you know, like just, he'd be like, yeah, come on. And we go, so I could get whatever I wanted with him, but he loved these sort of movies. So I think I've seen this with him, but I've certainly not seen it to the end, because I do remember the Sean Penn bits as well. So, but I haven't seen it in its entirety. So this is the first time, but I do think around here, this would have been one just before I got with Sam. I would have watched it, because I got with her in 98. So it's like 97-ish. Mm. We would have come out maybe early 98. I got with Sam in about the May. So I think I've sat and watched bits of it with him, or I've gone round there to see him and he's had it on, because I definitely remember some of it, but not all of it. But yeah, I didn't know what to expect, because I was thinking, oh, what the hell is this? The Game? Is it something? You know, is it something? And I don't mind a bit of Michael Douglas. I mean, Black Rain we've never done. I love that movie. Mm. Obviously, Basic Instinct, Dave, 37 minutes in, 43 minutes in. I know all the timestamps. But he's called Nick in that. He's called Nicholas Van Orton in this. He's called Nick, I think Nick Curran or something like that in Basic Instinct, you know, with the cop. But Yeah, I don't mind him falling down. Like I say, falling down, we've not even touched, you know, and that's
a great
movie. That is brilliant. So, yeah, so I do like a bit of Michael Douglas. So, yeah, so I'm looking forward to this one, to be honest, Dave.
Very good, very good. Well, Chris, I am intrigued as I do the little snakey and to find out what you think of it. So let's get into our trailer.
Well, what do you get for the man who has everything? Everything.
Everything. Happy birthday, sir.
Thank you, Maggie.
I don't like her. So what brings you to town, Conrad? Everything all right?
October 12th. Nikki's birthday.
This is for you. Consumer Recreation Services.
Call that number.
Why?
They make your life fun.
What are you selling?
It's a game.
A game?
Specifically tailored for each participant.
There's a little small John, chapter 9, verse 25. Whereas once I was blind, now I can see. Now I can see.
One day your game begins. You either love it or hate it.
Are you going to spend the rest of the evening prying at that clown's mouth?
Mr. Van Orton, is everything all right?
Ah, Mr. Van Orton.
Have we met?
I believe so.
Why are you following me? Find out about a company called Consumer Recreation Services.
They won't stop, Nick.
He's in on it.
I paid the bill. I paid him more to make it stop.
I need the police. They're gonna break into my house. I'm being toyed with by a bunch of depraved children.
They're trying to kill me.
Who's behind this? Who did this to me? Why?
This is all the game.
Right now, I am extremely dangerous.
You're behind the whole thing, aren't you? No!
They make your life fun.
Nicholas Van Orton, a wealthy, selfish investment banker in San Francisco, has lunch with his estranged younger brother, Conrad, who gifts him an unusual present for his 48th birthday, a voucher for a game offered by a company called Consumer Recreation Services, or CRS. Though skeptical, he goes to the CRS office to apply, but the time-consuming psychological and physical examinations required irritate him, and he is later informed that his application was rejected. Now, Chris, what do you reckon to the opening of this movie?
Well, you know what, Dave? I've got to say, I mean, it's a two-hour movie. I think it's a perfect sweet spot for this type of movie, to be fair. It doesn't go on for 3 hours. It's about right, this. I didn't know what to expect. I'm going into, obviously, it's before, I mean, the internet's its infancy at this point. You know, the digital age that we live in, you know, comes like nearly 30 years later. You know, everything's digital now. But the idea behind these sort of concepts of a movie and it being a game, I was like, I don't get it. You know, I mean, Sean Penn's not in it for loads, but he's a great actor, Sean Penn. You know, obviously, Michael Douglas is good in this. But I just wasn't sure. And I must admit, when he gets rejected for it, because he's a bit like, it's funny, isn't it? Because his character, and revealing behind the curtain, as we say, but like you've called yourself Gordon Gekko today. I won't tell everyone what I've been called today, Dave, but his character is very reminiscent of Gordon Gekko, isn't it? You know, it's that character again. Like we did, we even did the one with Kathleen Turner, didn't we? The marriage one.
War of the Roses.
Yeah, we've been on a bit of a Michael Douglas meander for the last few months, haven't we? You know, Romancing the Stone and all that sort of thing. So it's interesting that he's not that far away from that character, if that makes sense, where he is. He's San Francisco. He's loading, investment banker. But he's a bit of an arse, isn't he? He's that sort of no messing about. businessman. So yeah, so it starts off quite familiar. You know, we've done his characters over the last few months. Wall Street we did as well, didn't we? You know, more than anything, Golden Gecko. But yeah,
let's not forget as well, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Well, I brought the knowledge and you were skeptical, Dave. I'm sorry.
You didn't bring that one up first.
Yeah, well, I was thinking before, thinking which one did I get Dave on when he was having none of it. But yeah, Michael Douglas was there for that one. So it just feels very familiar. But I do like Michael Douglas as an actor. So I think he's very good at this sort of movie. And it does feel, it treads the line a little bit like Basic Instinct, Dave, which, you know, I've watched numerous times. So I enjoy the start of it. I really, really do. However, I am thinking, what's going on here? Is this a game? Is it not? What's happening? It does the way the movie plots, I don't really second guess the game at this point. I just sort of see it as he's been rejected. So I think it's just a really, really good thing of sort of tailing off my trail of thought, what's going on.
Yeah. And it's funny, isn't it? Because you have a dislike of Harrison Ford, because basically whatever role he plays, it's basically Harrison Ford. So it's, you know, if he's Indiana Jones, it's Harrison Ford playing himself. If it's Han Solo, it's Harrison Ford playing himself. You know, it's always the same character. I'd have to say the same about Michael Douglas, because it's funny you're saying about all those other movies. Now, I'd say Falling Down is a little bit different, isn't
yes.
it? You know, he's playing a slightly different character there. But watching it this time, I couldn't help but feel like this is Gordon Gekko, but, you know, he's got himself back on his feet, you know, after being ruined at the end of Wall Street with Charlie Sheen. And yeah, I did start to think, I'm like, is it just Michael Douglas? Is he acting, you know, or is this mostly him? Now, I am still gripped. And like yourself, I remembered very, very basic plot points. And exactly like Usual Suspects, I remember the twist at the end. But I going through it, I couldn't really remember, you know. I didn't remember that when he went through all the tests, it was so kind of mundane and dull, you know. And he's going through this whole process, and I'm putting myself in his shoes, and I'm like, oh, I'd be fucked off now. I'd just be like, look, give me my coat, I'm going. But, you know, going all through that, and then I remember he'd met the girl, but she was in on it, you know, and we're going to spoil everything, by the way. So, you know, if you haven't watched it, definitely watch it. I'm like, oh, I can't remember this. And it did feel a little bit long to me. I'm like, okay, come on, like, get on with it. Like, start doing stuff. Because even just to get to the point where, you know, she runs into him at the restaurant, and then basically his life starts to unravel. It took quite a while, didn't it? It took the best part of an hour to actually get there, to actually, you know, getting into his falling down sort of state. But I wouldn't say I was bored. It took a while to get going.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the table setting takes a while. I mean, I've never seen it. I've like properly, like I say, I remember little bits of it. So for me, I sort of went with it. I love the fact that he gets the clown, and the clown's got the camera, and it's like, well, you've been rejected. What's going on? And then he thinks like they're playing pranks on him, don't they? And all that. And it's like a bit of a, oh yeah, great, great. But what I think does a really good thing. And there is plot holes, because at the end of the day, you've got all these moving parts to get this guy who basically, you're absolutely, in some respects, Dave, you know what this movie ends up being like? Like Scrooge. Because it's like, he's an all-compassing arsehole. And at the, you know, the payoff is he's got a conscience again. You know, like one of them sort of thing. He's forgot who he is type of thing. But there's a lot of stuff that could have happened to him. He could have been killed at various points in this movie, no matter what, you know, because it's the game. However, the way they sort of, his business all falls apart, you know, the police aren't there. Every time he goes to sort of report the CRS, or he's trying to speak to someone, you know, either the building's shut or there's something going on where it's like, are you sure? You're losing your mind. I mean, it's a hell of a present his brother gives him, Dave, to basically fuck up his life and give him PTSD for the rest of his days. I mean, it's I mean, I've got three brothers and five sisters, and we don't always get on. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure I'd put one of them through something like that and go, surprise, hey. But I think it's brilliantly done. I really do. And reading some of the trivia, I'm sure you have that. He was going to do this before Seven, wasn't he? And then he got Brad Pitt, and it was like, right, Seven comes first. Then he made this one, David Fincher. So, yeah, I think it does a really good job of laying it all down. But there's so many chains of events where the police or somebody with a thingy would actually get involved, if you know what I mean. But I went with it, and I'll be honest with you, Dave. I'm trying not to spoil it, but I really enjoyed it, to be honest. I thought it was a really, really good film.
Now, I have to say, in terms of being far-fetched, I think Assault on Devil's Island was a bit more reined in. You know, so you think, like, into, you know, the leaps that you have to go to. I mean, he's in fucking San Francisco, isn't he? This massive city, but everyone's in on it, seemingly. Everyone he runs into, you know, and you think as soon as you get out into the public, like, lots of different things could happen. If he was in like a small little town, which wouldn't fit the character, to be fair, but you know, something like the little town with in First Blood or something like that. I'm sure we've done other ones with little towns where everyone knows each other. The Red Rock West, Rock West. You could kind of understand and believe that everyone's in on it, but yeah, in San Francisco, it's a bit more of a leap. And so I do like, well, not that I like it, I do embrace that, but you know, you've got to suspend disbelief a little bit really to really get into it. But yeah, I'm definitely prepared to do that. And I think what's funny about what you say about Seven, the way this is shot, the kind of color palette, everything is really dark and dour, isn't it? And it does give you almost that Seven kind of feel. But I do like how it kind of builds up. And you say about the Scrooge character. I mean, Scrooge was objectively a fucking arsehole, wasn't he? You know, what I mean, he had this self-centered life, and you know, he went out of his way to just be miserly and just, you know, put up rents for people who couldn't afford it and stuff. With Nick, I think it's more that he just lives this kind of isolated life. You know, he's been divorced. You know, there's something weird there going on, isn't there? Because his ex-wife always seems to ring him up on his birthday and stuff. But I think that's what, you know, Conrad is really trying to do, is to try and break him out of this real self-centered, isolated life. It's not that he's a bad person. He's just, you know, he's just confined by this really controlling kind of life. He's this investment banker. He's incredibly successful, incredibly wealthy, but, you know, not really being fulfilled. So I can see him being quite different to Scrooge, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I think it's for me, Scrooge was a bell end, unless you're Michael Caine, obviously, Dave, with the old company accent with a cracking film. We've covered that. We'll love it. But no, I think as well, in relation to his character and what could happen and all these moving parts, you know, obviously he has a pop with his brother, Conrad. We've got this whole backstory about his dad, which you find out, obviously, Nick was the one who saw his dad commit suicide, didn't he? So he's haunted by that. But the one bit that really threw me was the taxi ride, was the fact that he gets in the taxi, the guy's there, he's like, unlock it, stop it. He goes into the fucking water. He could have killed himself in there, Dave. Yeah. I don't care how good this game is or how good your health and safety is, which obviously there isn't any. They're relying on him escaping from this taxi that's sinking in the marina, aren't they? And that's where I was like, I don't believe that. And not that I don't believe it, but then there was, I mean, was at the end of it now, when I look back, these are the sort of scenes where you're like, well, this wouldn't have worked as a present or as a game if he'd killed himself. However, also, it's like, was the fail-safe stuff in? Is that, you know, like there's a bit of dialogue at the end, which is a bit weak, but there's loads of times where Nick or Nicholas could have been killed, you know, like just for, and that's when, and us as the audience, I must admit, then I'm thinking, it's not a game, this. A CRS, some sort of, are they after him or, you know, is it, so there is a bit with the audience when you're watching it, when you do think, I think this is not a game. This is Conrad fucking just trying to kick off him. You know, is he after his money and all this sort of thing? His brother, is this like the double cross that we're expecting? So there is a lot of stuff with it, and it leads you thinking, and it's a psychological thriller, but it does. I was genuinely not sure where it was going, the movie, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I'm going to say in my head canon, they've got teams of divers, but I can kind of imagine that whoever's watching from afar, you know, like almost your stunt coordinator, you know, it's like, oh, he could probably hold his breath for about, you know, a couple of minutes or something like that. And then it gets to like 2 minutes. It's like, yeah, he's probably all right.
Yeah,
and then everyone's just waiting around. It's like, bring Conrad. Funny thing happened.
What colour of coffin do you want for your brother? We'll pay for it. Yeah,
but it is good. I mean, it does throw out the red herrings there, doesn't it? Because you're sort of wondering what's going on. I mean, like I say, even though I remembered the twist at the end, even I'm thinking when I'm rewatching it this time, I'm like, oh yeah, I can totally see that. You know, you'd be thinking, oh, they're trying to nab his money. They're just this scam organization. And Conrad plays a great role, to be fair, for, you know, considering he's just his brother. You know, yeah. Obviously it's Sean Penn playing his brother, but you'd think, well, if this, again, if it was real life, you'd just be, you'd be reliant on the brother really committing to that role of being someone who, you know, he thought CRS was great, but they're trying to just screw him out of money, and they, you know, he ends up running off, doesn't he? And so it does build up that paranoia about what, you know, what could happen. But the thing that really took me out of it before the end is where he sees the price tag on the lamp. You know, so he's starting to think all is not quite right, and you know, he sees the price tag, and it just seemed weird that, you know, they've made out this whole, I mean, it's essentially this apartment, but it's almost like a studio set, you know, that's how I'm thinking about it. If you've got these people, these events organizers, like trying to set up this thing, and like it didn't look like a room where anything was you know, no detail was spared. But the one place he looks in the lampshade, the price tag's right there, and someone's forgot to take the price tag off. You know, got it from IKEA or something. So, yeah, again, but it happened, and then I was like, ah, that's nonsense. But then I kind of move on from it. It didn't really take me out of it for too long.
No, and I think you're right. And I think like the situation where he's with like the waitress at this point, you know, they've run up. There's this whole sex scene thing, isn't there, where like it's all been staged. Like, he doesn't remember it, and he's got these pictures, Annie, and he's like, what's going on? And then obviously he then realizes that they've took all his money, and the drain in his bank account. They basically, she's called Christine. She says like they've, when they escape, like, yeah, but they've took all your money and all this. They've guessed your passwords and all this. And they're in fucking hell, Dave. What the hell of sort of present is this? Now, if, you know, if me and you said to you, like, Dave, I'm going to get you something nice. I'm not going to get a game that's going to basically absolutely psychologically break you down, give you PTSD till the fucking day you die, where you're just completely, like, panicking over everything. You know, even to the point where he's off asking for a bottle of water. And he's like, have you opened that? Yeah. Well, you're not having it, you know. And this is so before this, he ends up in this grave, doesn't he? He's poisoned, and she's telling him about the cameras, and he's in Mexico. I mean, I missed that. I might have been, I don't know how I've done this. I don't know, because I did watch it. I wasn't really on my phone. How did he get across the border without his passport, Dave? Did he say he's got his passport on him? Because I couldn't remember, you know, when he wakes up and he's walking, he's got that white suit on, and he's like disheveled, isn't he? And he goes into that diner and he says, I've got $18. And obviously he's got that watch on because that guy says there's no way you've been mugged because that watch won't be on your wrist sort of thing. And he's got these dad's the watch thing on, hasn't he? Like a Rolex where it is. But I couldn't work out. The next minute he's in a truck back in San Francisco asleep.
I think the watch sort of bought him passage across the border. I think that's that's the implication, I think.
Okay, now that's a hell of a reach. That's fucking Hulk Hogan fucking levels of reach in that, mate.
That's what I'm saying.
It's about as reachable as Hulk Hogan's wig he wears in that fucking movie. That is fucking unbelievable reach.
I agree. I mean, I'm just imagining, you know, the day after. You know, and again, they're at the restaurant, same restaurant where Conrad and Nicky were talking. And, you know, you've got a disheveled fucking Nicky there. Like, I can see you thinking, right, over why you'd like to break me down and like, for me to embrace life. But for fuck's sake, you know, reaching across the table to strangle him. You know, it's just... It's fucking horrendous, isn't it? I mean, you know, buy me a nice pair of shoes or an event, you know, just sort of do something like that. So, yeah, again, you can't think too deeply, I think, about, you know, how it would be in real life. I think, again, for some reason, I'm quite forgiving of this one, Chris. And other movies I'll watch, I'm like, oh, this is such bullshit, you know, it's just utter nonsense. I just can't get over this. I can't suspend disbelief. It's nonsense. But for some reason, I forgive this. And I think maybe it's the gloss of the movie. I mean, the cinematography is fantastic, isn't it? And Michael Douglas, even though he is playing the same character, he's basically Gordon Gekko again. He's sort of, I don't know, he's magnetic on the screen, isn't he? He's just really kind of, you know, you can't stop watching it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think it's his portrayal around some of the holes in the movie that make it work. I mean, I'm just reading that, so you're right. He sells his watch to get back to San Francisco. So that's like the whole idea of how he must get over the border. You're right about that. But it's when he goes to get his brother done. He goes to the hotel and they're like, yeah, he's had a nervous breakdown. There's been an incident and all this. And he's like, they sent to a mental institution. So he's like, what the fuck's going on? And goes back to his house. His house has got the chains on it, hasn't it? And then he finds his hidden gun. That's when he speaks to his ex-wife and he's chatting to her and he says, please forgive me, blah, blah, blah. And you have that little meeting together. But I think what gets me is when he realizes that Jim Feingold is an actor. And he goes into this fucking Chinese takeaway. Of all the leaps, Dave, his picture's on the wall with a signature. Yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, Michael Douglas at this point, Nicholas, he's gone full-on detective from nowhere, hasn't he? And he's got the gun and he's just walking around with a gun and nobody seems to react to the fact he's got a gun. He reminded me a little bit when he's got the gun in open places when Blade kicks the shit out of that fucking vampire. On the bonnet of the car, just for the cop, and nobody's bothered that it's a cop. Nobody's bothered that this fucking guy is just absolutely levering an officer of the law, and everyone just goes about the business. And this is the same, you know, when he nicks the picture and runs off, and the next minute he finds him, doesn't he? And that's the whole thing where, because he sees the guy on the telly doing an advertisement, doesn't he? And he's like, he's an actor. I read some stuff about David Fincher. Apparently he even said that his wife hates the movie. They were in it together and she, the end of the movie, he doesn't like the end of the movie. He tried to keep it consistent. I think it's good, but there's a lot of leaps. I mean, he goes to the zoo to catch this guy. His wife offers up where he is. He says he's after a job, as if like a casting fucking director is going to go to the zoo and go and have a word with him about this part. I mean, she gives it up straight away, doesn't she? You'd be well suspicious. He pulls a gun on him. No, these kids around, parents around, nobody reacts. Now, obviously, they're all in on it, aren't they? I know. But you know, like when you're watching it, I'm like, why is nothing, what is going on? Again, and this is all, in retrospect, you go, right. You know what I mean? Because the kids would have gone, oh my God, you know, someone would have seen someone with a gun or something. But anyway, you're right. So that sort of answers my own question in my head. But I think it's when he goes to the CRS building and he just comes in, doesn't he? And he gets up there and he's got the gun. And we've got almost sliver sort of situation. We've got the camera, haven't we, and the cigarettes. Mm. We're losing control of all this. Who's the main person? And he goes into the canteen and all these people who he's interactive with are there, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're all different people. Like, you know, Feingold's gone up there. These all people. He sets it out and then he sees her, doesn't he, Christine? And it's like we have this sort of Russian standoff. Again, Dave, the guy with the gun, is there any need to just start automatically firing at them? You know, I know it's they're obviously dummies, but there's a few people take one. Feingold takes one for the team. And then when it comes to on top of the building, and I know I've talked a lot there and jumped it, but I genuinely thought, is this real or not? I did think they did a good job of trying to convince me that I thought that scene was actually real. I thought genuinely was people getting killed.
Yeah, I think it is interesting, isn't it? I mean, we haven't really talked too much about Christine, but played by Deborah Kara Unger, and I hadn't really seen her in anything else. And I thought the casting for her was quite good, really, because she is clearly a very pretty woman. Oh, we haven't done that one as well, actually, Chris, have we?
Pretty woman.
Talk about all how wrong that is at some point, I'm sure. But I think she's cast quite well because she's not that like Hollywood stunning actor. Like, say if you had a fucking the waitress was Margot Robbie or something. It's like, fuck off. You know, there's no one buying that. So I think she's like quite believable. But yeah, when it gets to the end there, I mean, the tension really does ramp up, doesn't it? Because, you know, he's got the gun, they're on the top there. Like you say, it's all like, what the fuck's going on? And she's saying, oh, he's got the wrong gun, so he's got the gun with the bullets in and stuff. And, you know, oh, this is all fake. And, you know, she's trying to tell him, trying to talk him down. Again, Oscar-worthy performance from her, you know, again, imagining this is real life. And then the door opens, and of course it's Conrad, isn't it? You know, and he's got his white suit on there, you know, so strikingly the way it looks, you know, and he gets shot, and obviously you see all the blood and stuff on the white suit, or the white jacket at least. And, you know, you're thinking, oh, shit. You know, and even though he's quite a cold, isolated character, you can tell, like, he does love his brother, and he's got all this trauma from his dad and stuff. And he thinks in that moment he's just killed his brother, you know, and you know, talk about gaslighting, you know, a star.
Yeah.
You guys win it. You know? So he thinks, you know, my dad's committed suicide. I've just murdered my own brother, who, you know, set this all up for me. I'm going to have to take the only option out of here. I'm going to have to kill myself, you know, in that moment. And then that, Chris, you talk about leaps. And I don't know. I haven't looked. I can imagine there's a fair bit of criticism online if I was to go and have a look. But in a building with four sides on it,
you know, yeah,
he chooses to jump out of the exact right side that he needs to jump out of to get down on a big inflatable crash mat sort of thing. And you know, they've got breakaway glass apparently, because they say, oh, you know, this is breakaway glass, but you know, it can still cut you. And you're like, oh, every time I watch that shot, and I wish they'd have done it a bit different, so that, you know, it looks like there was obstacles in the way of the other side. So it kind of guided him down a particular route. But yeah, it bugged me at the time, you know, even though I'd enjoyed the movie, it bugged me at the time that, oh, he had to jump out at exactly the right side of the building, but also at the right velocity to land where he needed to land. What did you reckon at the end there, Chris?
Utter horseshit, that, Dave. I agree. You've gone round. You've been diplomatic there. It's not Gus Gorman levels of I'm going to fall off the fucking skyscraper with my skis on and land perfectly. You know, Superman 3 and fucking, you know,
was
Richard
it Virtuosity?
Pryor. What's that? Virtuosity.
Is it Virtuosity or what was the Denzel Washington thing where he jumps down
that Ricochet. what a film that was, Dave. Fucking hell. But yeah, it's unbelievable. You're right. You've got four sides to this building. He jumps perfect. He decides in his head, I've killed my brother. I'm off. See you later. And he walks and she turns around. No, you know, I'm thinking, fucking hell, this isn't the game, you know, and he goes. But like you say, he's falling from like fucking 200 feet in the air or whatever. It's probably higher, straight through a glass window into the crash mat. And everyone's around him with a glass of champagne. Hey, whoa, how great was that? What a game. Happy birthday. It's just bollocks. That's just so not right. The only way that would have worked is, I mean, he said, didn't he? And there was that really bad bit of dialogue from Feingold. They went, oh, I'm glad you did that jump. I was supposed to throw you off it if you didn't do it. I'm like, you couldn't. He was like fucking he was like a fucking twig. There's no way he was going to get Nicholas off that building, was he? If there'd been a struggle, you know, in a fight or something, Dave, or they had a bit of a wrestle and then they fell over. I can believe it, and it's part of the game. You know what I mean? Like, I can believe that, or he pushes him, or something happens for sort of Nicholas to fall off. But the fact that they knew him that well, they psychologically profiled him, he would jump off, is utter bollocks. And it does take it away from it. And then the next scene, because you do see Sean Penn's been shot, blood in the suit and everything. And you see his body, don't you? You see his chest cavity with the blood under there. He comes down with his glass of champagne. Hey, brother, fucking happy birthday. Yeah, great, that, wasn't it? Dave, I'd have chinned him, brother or not. Yeah. I'd have fucking chinned him. He's just absolutely broke me down psychologically, mentally. I'm absolutely need fucking to just go away and just be on my own because I just don't know what's happened. You'd be having nightmares for ages. And it's just fobbed off like it's a fucking thing. That bit is bollocks. He would have got a crack. I don't care whether it's your brother or not. Everything you've been through, I don't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just like you've done this fake out of this slightly traumatic event. He's literally been driven to the point where he thinks he has to take his own life. Exactly. Where he basically, nothing is worth living. And so I'm going to fucking kill myself. That shit leaves mental scars, you know? You'd never recover from that, would you? You'd just be like, you motherfuckers, I'm going to fucking sue all of you. You know, and his ex-wife's there, you know, she's in on it and everything as well. These are all fantastic actors, aren't they? And no one said, this sounds a bit fucked up. This sounds fucking wrong. You want to literally either him to jump or you to throw him off a fucking building. So in that moment, he thinks he's going to fucking die and splat on the ground. This is really fucked up. So yeah, I kind of love hate the end. I think back to that first time of watching it, and I was trying to just make sure I didn't say anything about the movie before you were going into it, because like I say, when he jumps off, you're thinking, oh, fucking hell, that's the end, you know, cut to credit, game over. But no, it's all a fucking ruse, you know, and everyone's in there, like you say, the champagne's flowing then, it's, oh, this is great, you know, what a laugh it was. but utter nonsense as well.
Yeah, utter nonsense. But Dave, a great pick, honestly. A very, very unusual movie. And we've had a few of these. Devil's Advocate was like a psychological thriller on it as well. So yeah, in some respects. So no, I enjoyed it, mate. So shall we get into our review scores?
Let's go.
So, Dave, interesting pick, I will say. You've picked a couple of crackers recently, actually. Really, really enjoyed it. But I do think it suffers with the end bit. I read the trivia afterwards because I come away thinking, these leaps here, literally his leap off the building. The water scene. I went with it at this point. In this point in the movie, I think the thing is, it's only afterwards that I'm like, this is bullshit. But watching it, I enjoyed it because I didn't actually think it was the game. I thought like it had gone sinister. So I think the movie does a really, really good way of throwing you off the scent of, well, it's not like The Running Man, you know, one of them where you're blagging it, they're in the stage, you know, all that sort of thing, and you've got to, you know, survive, and they're never going to survive, really. This is like real life, and there's loads of moving parts when you take a step back where you go, this is fucking bollocks, you know. But I genuinely went with it, and I didn't believe it was part of the game. I did feel that Christine had gone rogue. I felt like that they were, at the end, the shots were real. It was all killing. But then the payoff when he jumps off the building and everyone just comes together like they've been in some comedy and everyone's like patting each other on the back. And then within 5 minutes, Nicholas is at the bar. He wants to go off with Christine. She's got another job, which was obviously leading on to a sequel, I suppose. That's what lets it down, I think. I think everything works up to the bit where he falls off the building. And then it really, really took me away from it, because I was like, that, even me, Dave, the man who brings some of the worst movies you've ever seen to this podcast, was like, this has ruined it. That bit really just say, however, I did enjoy it. So I'm going to send it to Hill Valley, Dave. If it's on again on TV, at some point, I probably would watch it. It's a good movie. It's just that end bit is so fucking far-fetched. You know what I mean? Like I say, I mentioned it earlier. It's as far-fetched as Hulk Hogan's wig in fucking Assault on Devil's Island. So good pick, mate, but that end bit's a joke. So what about yourself?
Yeah, I think this is even more unbelievable at the end than being in a bank waiting for it to be taken over by terrorists.
Stop it.
And having your crutches, which are actually a spear-throwing device.
I have not mentioned that movie for a long time, but you ever slander that movie again, Dave, that is it. We are finished. How dare you?
I'm not actually slandering it. The more time that goes on that I haven't watched No Retreat, No Surrender 3, I kind of want to watch it. I mean, that bank scene is just amazing when I think to it. I can just see Keith Vitale's fucking shit-eating grin face, like, you know,
boils
brilliant. The bank plot and gets the girl. So, yeah, the ending to this is even more far-fetched than that. So, but apart from that, and like I say, I do have this love-hate relationship with it, because it is a great twist. But it's also slightly silly as well. And if you think about it for any longer than 2 seconds, it's like, oh, yeah, that really wouldn't work. But, yeah, I think for me, the way it is shot, the way each scene is allowed to breathe. So even before it starts to spiral, you're kind of immersed in Nicky's life, you know, and it's this very isolated existence, you know. From the outside looking in, you'd think, oh, he's this massively successful person, you know, he's got everything, but really he doesn't have a fulfilled life, you know. He's fucking divorced, he's kind of got this weird relationship with his ex-wife, you know. You can see that something, there are still some latent kind of feelings there. And, yeah, just everything's controlled. Everything's very precise in his life. But, you know, he needs a bit of excitement, is what his younger brother thinks. Again, I'm not sure how I'd think about that as well. Just buy me a pair of fucking socks next year. But, yeah, I do like it. And I think it suffers a little bit from the same thing that Usual Suspects do. So, like you say, if it's on, you know, TV, I might watch a bit of it, but I don't know if I, you know, really seek it out again. And so even though I still enjoyed it, really enjoyed it, you know, coming back to it again this time, but in terms of rewatchability, I've got to kind of mark it down a little bit for that as well. So I'm almost in Pleasantville, but not quite. I think it's a Hill Valley for me as well, just because of that. So many leaps, not just the one at the end, but all the way through the movie. The fact that everything kind of comes together, and the only interactions he has with people in running around San Francisco are that all in on it. They're all the actors for the CRS. It's just a bit of nonsense, but really well put together movie, I think. And like I say, for me, the score as well, I think that does a lot to make you feel the kind of tension when you need to and the drama and everything. So yeah, top movie. I actually came into this, Chris, thinking I was going to send it to Pleasantville, but no, the more I think about it, I'm just going to bring it down a little bit.
No, it's fair. It's fair. And I think, like you say, just that end bits are silly. But Dave, can I just bring you back to something before we get into what next week's pick is going to be? We haven't had an update, actually. You mentioned the greatest action movie.
And you said you hadn't mentioned it very often.
But I haven't. But I've mentioned it every week. Now, we didn't mention it last week, but the No Retreat, No Surrender 3, on our YouTube channel, the VHS Strikes Back, with commentary from yours truly, has gained, Dave, another 4,000 viewers. So we're now gone from 37,000 to 41,000 views in 2 weeks. This is definitely on course for the Comics in Motion's greatest ever upload to YouTube, The Losers, which everyone thinks is a bootleg version of the movie that we've uploaded to our channel. And then we have obviously, we're not at the stage that we've said about taking the comments off, Dave, but we were getting a lot of abuse in Spanish on that one because they thought it was the full movie.
I had an epiphany, Chris. I don't think people were logging. People haven't been clicking because they think it's the movie. People think it is the comic. It's some like moving comic or animated version of The Losers. That's what I think people think it is, because the name of the podcast is obviously Comics in Motion. I kind of feel like that's, and somehow the algorithms, I mean, you could make that explanation for pretty much everything else, couldn't you? But it just literally occurred to me this week. I was like, I wonder if they think it's some kind of animated thing. And then you know, they get on it. It's just me and you talking. It's like, motherfuckers. So... Yeah. So what are we on? I miss what are we on for the total? So we've got 4,000 more views for No Retreat.
41,000 views, David. 41,000.
It's not bad at all, is it?
No, it's not bad at all. You look at No Retreat, No Surrender 1, we've got 696, Dave. So, and that's with our commentary, but that is on there as well. So we just need to do the second one, Dave, and then the trifecta will be complete on our channel. We need to do a watch along for that one.
Isn't it weird, though, how it kind of YouTube just randomly, because loads of people, it had been our videos probably suggested for some reason, and that's how they're going to it. So whereas the first one doesn't, so interesting.
I think it's as well, it was in sort of copyright limbo for ages, and I actually contacted the movie people direct and they give us permission to use it, and all of a sudden, because it became live, some sort of algorithms picked it up, haven't they? And it's back on our channel. It wasn't on the channel, so that's amazing. We'll have to do that, Dave. Maybe we should just copyright strike everything and then go begging and then put it up there. But yeah, brilliant. Absolutely just good for exposure for the channel. I just love every week I go on and go, oh, I need to have a check at that. I'm like, who the fuck is watching this? Was it that popular? 41,000 people. But I'm happy. Lauren Avedon's getting more and more royalties, and Kiefer Tyler. There's more chance of Blood Brothers 4, Dave, in wheelchairs while they do a few fucking chops and a few kicks and stuff.
According to Lauren Avedon's Instagram post, the money's gonna print itself. So
exactly, Dave. I've not told you, but I'm part of that fucking stingy pyramid scheme, Dave. I'm just bringing everybody in through our channel.
This has been a five-year-long strategy to build Lauren's career back up.
It's like CRS. I'm in charge of his life, really, Dave. Yeah. I'm just building him back up. He'll be 76 by the time we get the funding for Blood Brothers 4, but there you go. Brilliant. So, Dave, our next pick is a good friend of ours and someone who I'm meeting up in Vegas in September, one of our Patreons, Mr. Matt Bates, the Black Country blogger as well. So, me and Matt are definitely meeting. You know, instead of meeting him in this country at some point, Dave, no, I'm going to travel like 10,000 miles and actually meet him in person in Vegas. But we're both there at the same time. Matt's been messaging me this week, so I'm looking forward to that. We're going to do a crossover vlog and gambling and go for a drink with him and his wife, Jane, and that's Sam. So, yeah, it should be good. So I'm looking forward to that. But he's picked, Dave, a movie. I'm sure this was the year you were born, Dave. 1966, this one came out, Dave. A funny thing happened on the way to the forum, and it stars Phil Silvers, Sergeant Bilko, who used to love Dave, Michael Crawford, Roy Kinnear. It's directed by none other than Superman's greatest ever director, Richard Lester, Dave. And yeah, I've never seen this one. It's a very, very interesting carry-on type movie. So shall we get into the trailer?
Let's go.
Familiar for us, Dave. I haven't. It's not the same people like Carry On, isn't it? You see that guy then? I used to love the Carry On movies.
I was thinking about Carry On. I was thinking about Carry On. I was thinking, should we do one?
You're in need of a suit.
Might be a bit dangerous.
How did you know?
Yeah.
Be a fine
suit.
Karen Campbell
was one of my favourite. Barbara
Williams.
Well,
there's a spirit in my
house. Karen Matron. Yeah, there was one. Yeah, there was one in that as well, with the suspenders on. They always had to go to a hospital. They always dressed like that. Not like the Matron, by the way. Suspended.
I told you 100 times.
Sergeant
Bilko. Do not fan the girls when they're wet. But you'll never learn. You'll be a eunuch all your life.
You better get your fucking impressions family. Ready for this.
My father will turn in his
I
grave.
Don't know what you mean.
Your father is alive.
Betty.
This will kill.
I'll do a bit of practice. He'll end up being the main in fucking Batman impressions.
I think those are the old Betty. Are they over the line now?
Maybe.
The most refreshing climate in the world.
Mr. Keaton?
Hell yeah.
The whole film, but thank you, Matt. Yeah. And what a great that's this is going to be. And it's going to be Jason and the Argonauts earlier than this day. This is going to be our second oldest movie, I think, we've ever covered.
I think, didn't we do Goldfinger, which was 63?
Oh, yeah, so it's around that time then, in it 66. So it's one of the made the top three, then it's definitely in the top three. But yeah, an interesting movie. I'm sure some of this is not going to have aged very well, Dave, but. Also, looking at the naked women, it's definitely got the Carry On movie style thing, hasn't it, about it?
Yeah, I tell you, I took my daughter this week to the Imperial War Museum, and it's fucking weird when you get to the Cold War stuff and that, because you're like, this was my life. You know? I remember this shit, you know, and they're now teaching it as history in schools. It's like, oh, fucking hell. So, yeah, I mean, it's just mad, really. But, yeah, no, really interested to see that one. This is definitely one of those that, you know, would have been on a Sunday afternoon or something like that. If they, you know, if they've shown all of the Carry On movies, this will be in its place. But, yeah, I kind of feel like this is probably more popular in the US. You know, a lot more US actors there, isn't there, than Carry On. So definitely in that same vein, I'd say.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And yeah, it's a new one, Dave. Definitely a new one for me. But thank you, should I say, to everyone for supporting us. We really appreciate it. If you want to email us, thevhsstrikesback@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on social media, @vhsstrikesback. If you do get a chance, please drop us a review on your podcast catching app, guys. We do appreciate it, and we'll read them out, good or bad. And if you do want to support us a little bit more, please go over to patreon.com/thevhsstrikesback. So the roll call of honour for today, and a massive thank you to Mr. Mike Burton, Lee, Helen, Dylan, Stephen, Trent, Dan, Justin, Susan, Timothy, Matt, Kent, Lucky Lulu Green, Herb, Jax, Math, Blake, Mr. John Hammond and Mr. Tony Farina. So thank you so much for your support, guys. We really, really appreciate it. And yeah, totally different movie that, Dave. And all I'm going to say to you, Dave, is what are you going to take us out with today?
Well, one of the lines that I thought in particular kind of put Nicky in that Gordon Gekko mold, if you like, is the top quote on IMDb here. He drops one of his shoes and he goes, "There goes $1,000. And Christine says, "Your shoes cost $1,000. He says, "That one did."
So eBay, yeah.
Yeah. Those definitely not from Primark, Chris. But thank you very much. It's been good fun to go through this one. Thanks to all our listeners out there. Thanks to all our supporters. And we'll speak to you next time.
Bye.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we gonna do now?
What are we gonna do? Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I'll be back.
That's not.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Wax on, wax off.
Ring the bell.
All right.
Ding, ding.
Bust you up.
Go for it.
Well, here we go.
Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Come on. Ain't so bad. Ain't nothing.
You must be crazy or something.
I'm crazy.
You're just a stupid fool.
Yeah, maybe you're stupid.
You're crazy.
I ain't breathing heavy.
He's a fool. He's stupid.
I've seen you in 6 hours.
I must break you.